You are listening to WCJV Digital Broadcasting, Youngstown, New York.
The Paranormal News Insider from ParanewsInsider.com. Presented by CJMarsRadio.com.
Welcome to the Paranormal News Insider for January 12th, 2016, and episode number 248. And this is your host, Dr. Brian D. Parsons, trying to stay warm here in the blustery Northeast Ohio area. It's cold, folks. It's cold. I'm going to have to build a fire here in the studio pretty soon. So if you hear some crackling, it's okay. If you hear me coughing and dropping the mic, then panic. But anyway, this week's show includes Caveman in the Carolinas, 50-year-old UFO case potentially solved, UFO sighting statistics for December and 2015 totals, statistics from NASA on a growing problem, and the wool hat was lifted in Australia, strange booms return again in 2016, plus the book of the week, and maybe a little bit more. And with that, we're going to segue here into our little promo thing that we do every single week, talking about the International Cryptozoology Museum located in Portland, Maine. It's the world's only cryptozoology museum. The International Cryptozoology Museum opened in 2003 and contains rare and original items collected by Lauren Coleman, the director of the museum. Now, I would tell you to go visit the International Cryptozoology Museum, but there's probably about 2 feet of snow up there. So visit it sometime when we thaw out a little bit, in a couple of months, and hopefully they'll get their moving done pretty soon in the spring. And that's what I'm here to talk about. The GoFundMe project is still going on. They're trying to gain a little bit of money so they can assist with the move of the nonprofit agency there and get the International Cryptozoology moved to a larger facility. I want to thank everybody for listening in tonight in the chat room. Dita, Cindy, Frank is in the house. Anna's there. And thanks also to the ParanormalForum.net folks. Debbie might be popping her head into the chat room tonight. Hopefully we'll see her tonight. And if you haven't checked out ParanormalForum.net, I've talked about it the last 2 weeks. You got to get there. And I've talked about message boards before. They're awesome. They're a great way to communicate with people. It's a lot different than social media, but social media was basically born out of message boards, and it's a great way to communicate about information and ideas, and it always forms a nice little network of people. And sometimes the message board things don't work out because you have a few rowdy people or people that don't want to hear other people's opinions, and you just get negativity, and it just grows from those little communities. But this one here at ParanormalForum.net is full of a whole bunch of awesome people. They're very open-minded, but they're not too open-minded that their brains fall out. And they're very very open to new visitors, and I highly recommend you get out there. Again, ParanormalForum.net, great little thing, and I want to thank Jim Mallard for getting me hooked on that little thing. It's a lot of fun, and again, it's a great group of people involved. So what's going on here for me? The Cleveland Ufology Project is having a meeting this Saturday in Parma, Ohio, rain, snow, or shine, and I'll be there as I'm a member of the Cleveland Ufology Project. And if you haven't heard of that, it's obviously a Cleveland, Ohio-based thing. And if you're in the area and you're interested, you can check out clevelandufo.com for directions and further information to attending a meeting. Now, you don't have to be a member to go to one of these meetings. You can pop in for $5 for non-members if they're not having a speaker, and $7 if they are having a speaker that particular night. Now, this Saturday at 7:30 is the meeting. From 7:30 to 10 p.m. Is their meeting. It's the third Saturday of every month. They're not having a speaker this month, so it'll be $5 if you want to visit. And it's at the Tri-C, the Cleveland Community College Western Campus in Parma, Ohio. It's not too hard to find. It's a big empty parking lot at 7:30 at night on a Saturday, but it was pretty easy to find. It's a nice group of people, and we talk about a lot of cool UFO-related things and also a lot of paranormal things too. It's a great time. It's like being in a live chat room. So check it out if you can. If you're interested and you're not sure about it, you can get a hold of me and I can answer any questions you have through any social media or anything, anywhere, anyhow. Now, tonight's show, as I mentioned at the top, there's a lot of little things going on. And I've selected a handful of stories to talk about tonight. Now, there's quite a bit of stuff happening in the paranormal news. It's kind of weird. Usually this time of the year, everything kind of slows down. But I know last year was pretty interesting. There was a lot of strange booms and strange noises, as well as a lot of Bigfoot stories in the news as well throughout January. And this is the second week, and I almost went 2 weeks without a cryptid story. So without further ado, we're going to jump right into cryptid news. So in cryptid news this week, again, there's not been much to report so far this year. And one story I did come across, I wasn't going to mention when I first read it, but I figured why not? And this story is gaining a little bit of traction out there as far as virality, people passing the story around. And so you might have seen it. You might have heard about this story out of North Carolina, where a man named Bernard Tillman recently reported seeing a strange creature while driving in the Kings Mountain area of North Carolina. The 66-year-old retiree was taking his dog for his daily ride when they came upon the creature that he described as standing 10 feet tall, humanoid, and walking on two legs. From that description, we can only think of one word. But Tillman did not use that one word we are thinking of. Instead, Tillman said of his encounter, quote, "He was huge. He was massive in the back and chest. His hair looked black. From the side profile, his neck, his head, his nose, and his lower jaw, he just looked like a Neanderthal." Unquote. Well, I know I was thinking Bigfoot when I was reading through that story, and I can't remember the last time I heard someone describe a sighting like this using the word Neanderthal. Well, he stated that the encounter lasted 30 seconds. I would bet that it was considerably less than this, even though he stated the creature did not initially see him. People have a tendency when they're in shock and see something like this to kind of over-exaggerate the time. Now, Tillman stated he was unable to get a photograph of the creature before it fled. No big surprise. Neanderthals themselves were actually between 5 and 5.5 feet tall on average, not 10 foot tall. I mean, I know what he was thinking. He just saw a hair-covered creature, but in reality, the male species of Neanderthals were about 5.5 feet tall, and females averaged around 5 foot tall on average. And they died out about 40,000 years ago. Neanderthals have never been discovered in the Americas, that being North and South America, as they lived in Europe and parts of Asia. They were not discovered anywhere near the Beringian region where the land bridge between present-day Russia and Alaska meet, where it is thought that our other ancestors made their way across before the Ice Age ended and separated the land masses around 13,000 years ago. So what did this guy see? Well, we don't know. I mean, it does sound more or less like a Bigfoot-type creature. I mean, it'd have to be a Bigfoot-type creature. I don't know of, again, too many Neanderthals that are running around North Carolina at this time. Again, they haven't really been sighted out there. But Bigfoot is a fairly decent sighting in that kind of area, and where this gentleman is located is near heavily forested areas. So it is pretty possible that this is a Bigfoot type of creature, Bigfoot related creature, but it is a little surprising that he would reference it as a Neanderthal. Maybe he was just afraid to say the word Bigfoot. Now, when you're looking at state sightings, North Carolina is kind of down there. It doesn't really have that many sightings. It's usually ranked a little higher than surrounding states such as South Carolina and Virginia. And it's right around the same range as, let's say, Tennessee, but not quite as big as Georgia and Florida. Florida obviously having this skunk ape, but it's a fairly active area. Not as active as, obviously, Oregon, Washington, California, and like I mentioned, Florida, as well as Ohio, are also very active states. But North Carolina, not usually quite as active on the Bigfoot scene. But this is interesting. And I believe that the sighting happened about, was it a year ago? I can't remember now. But it's not a recent actual report. It's just he just reported it lately, but it's a story that actually happened a while ago. But nonetheless, you still have to kind of keep an eye out. Well, I guess it happened in November of 2015, but he just recently reported it. But one little word of caution that I saw where the story popped up was in cryptozoologynews.com, and I don't like to I don't like to bash organizations or anybody that does blog work or anything, but I don't know the source of this story if it did come from Cryptozoology News, because they have stolen other stories in the past from other people, and I've talked about that here on this show. So I'm not sure about the validity of this report and if this person actually exists or where this actual report came from. So I'm taking it kind of with a grain of salt, but we'll kind of keep an eye on the story, and we'll see if anything else gets reported. And that's it for cryptid news and UFO news. This year marks the 50th anniversary of the Westall UFO incident. It's kind of weird. I've talked a lot about Australia lately. I don't know why. News.com from Australia has put up an interesting article showing the basic mystery behind the mass UFO sighting that occurred back on April 6th of 1966. Three metallic objects were seen slowly flying through the sky and then landing in a paddock adjacent to the Westall High School and Westall State School, and was observed by many people in the area as it happened at 11 a.m. Now, there were claims of men in black that arrived on scene after the incident, telling people to keep quiet about what they saw. It is also stated that the local television station, 9 News, had run a story on its 6 p.m. broadcast. But mysteriously, the film is now missing from their archives. While the incident is one of the most mysterious in Australian history, a logical solution may have been discovered last year. Actually, that would have been 2014. A government document was obtained in 2014 that describes a secret radiation testing project known as the Highball Program. That's HIBAL, a joint U.S.-Australian initiative developed to monitor atmospheric radiation levels using large silver balloons equipped with sensors between 1960 and 1969. These flights had large silver balloons flying into the atmosphere and then coming back down to land and being picked up by chase vehicles. Flight number 292 of the project was supposed to launch the day before the Westall sighting, but the records of the flight are still surrounded in mystery, even though the records surrounding the tests had been released to the public. The flight may have been delayed due to weather, but the records of Flight 292 were destroyed by the Department of Defense in 1996. Well, this seems like a strange move, especially if the flight was to be linked with the incident and it could explain it as a logical sighting. It's possible that the Department of Defense is worried about the tests being observed by the public, but this is 50 years after the fact, or really 30 years at the time when the files were purportedly destroyed. It's also possible that the 292nd flight never took place, and this was in fact a genuine UFO sighting. The destruction of the files would then certainly be interesting. And I know we talked about the Kecksburg incident a couple of weeks ago for another similar anniversary. And that one also may have a logical explanation. That's why I found this story kind of interesting. I'm not sure how many listeners I have out there in Australia. If I have any right now, I don't even know what time. It's probably like in the afternoon of tomorrow out there. So, g'day, mates, if you're listening in from Australia. It seems like I am covering a lot of news from them lately. And just kind of weird stuff. And speaking of weird stuff, you can get a hold of me any way you like through social media. Social media is really cool. It's it is really cool. I mean, come on, Facebook, Twitter, instantaneous information, right off the internet, right off your phone, wherever you're at, you can find out what's going on around you. It's awesome stuff. Great communication devices. And it fits in pretty well with these paranormal shows that we have going on all over the place. I'm on, as the mentioned, Facebook.com. You can find me there. Multiple little things I'm involved in. I have my own Dr. Brian D. Parsons site. I have the Paranormal News Insider. I have my personal site, Brian D. Parsons. My goodness, I have my ghost group is – my former ghost group is on there, and all kinds of other things are on there. But you can also find me on Google Plus, Paranews Insider, Twitter, at Paranews Insider. And I even have a website. Imagine that. Paranewsinsider.com, and you can email me at insider@paranewsinsider.com. If you have any information about a paranormal conference or convention or any kind of story, anything you want to talk about, if you have a book that you want me to mention or talk about or review for the listeners, I'll be happy to do that as well. So, we're still on UFOs here, and I've been doing the MUFON monthly statistics, and that's Mutual UFO Network for anyone who doesn't know what MUFON stands for. And I, during the summertime, I kind of had a little difficulty in obtaining the totals or the statistics. I've been lucky, though. I've been able to shake down different state organizations for that information. They tell me that I'm able to get that information from the CMOS, which is the which is their statistics little site here where people put in their sighting statistics or their sightings, rather, and on their website at MUFON.com. But I've not really been able to get the same statistics that I'm pulling from these other websites. But I do have the final statistics from December of 2015. And I'll also go through here the 2015 final statistics, which had a really strange anomaly towards the middle of the year, which we talked about here on the Paranormal News Insider before. And December 2015 was kind of a sad month, really and truly. It was actually the second lowest total of the year, cumulatively, with the total worldwide reports at 624. And as always, the United States had the most of these sightings with 496. Canada had the second most with 31, and the United Kingdom came in third with 19. Now, as we talk state sightings, California always seems to have the most sightings unless there's some kind of strange UFO flap going on, and they were not to disappoint in December. They turned in 90 reports, far greater than the second state, which was Florida, with 29. So Florida turned in three times the amount, or I should say California turned in three times the amount of sightings that Florida did. Texas was third with 28. Michigan had 20. Pennsylvania and Tennessee had 18 each. Arizona turned in 15. Ohio, New Jersey, Missouri, and North Carolina had 14 each. Indiana and Colorado had 11 each, and the remaining states turned in 10 or less sightings each. And looking at the 2015 final statistics, I'll only talk about the total number of worldwide reports for each month. January had 721, which is pretty steep for that time of the year. I have a theory about that. I think we'll talk about that here in a minute. February had 607, so a little drop off. March with a decent increase, but not quite as high as January, with 684 reports. April, a little bump here with 709. And then May with 900 worldwide reports. Pretty significant increase there in the numbers. And 737 of those came from the United States. So the United States alone had more sightings in the month of May than the cumulative total for January, February, March, or April. June continued this massive increase with 1,402 total sightings. And the United States turned in 1,180 of those. And then July, it kind of tapered off a little bit, 1,353 worldwide reports. August, 1,143. September, 985. October, 992. And then started to return a little bit more to normal with November's sightings at 791. And as I just mentioned, 624 for the month of December. So we look at the total number of sightings for the year. And this is, again, just to MUFON. MUFON.com, and that would total 10,911 total worldwide sightings. And if you divide that out, it's 909.25 per month, which is pretty darn good. That's quite a bit. 900 sightings may not sound like a whole lot per month, but that's a lot. When you divide that out by 50 states, and I don't know how many average investigators they have, but MUFON tries to investigate each and every one of these sightings to figure out if there's a logical source or if there is something more going on than meets the eye. But as we talked about before on the Paranormal News Insider, this massive spike in June and July and kind of spilled over into August, this does not mean that there was a ton of UFO sightings in June and July. As well as August. It just means that these were total number of reports turned into MUFON. And I think part of this is the popularity of the television show Hangar One, which got a lot of following here on social media and a lot of people talking about it, the UFO field talking about it. And it was a very popular show that also popularized MUFON, Mutual UFO Network, and inspired a lot of people, I feel, to turn in their sightings that were probably more than likely historical in nature. And if you go through and you look at June and July and August sightings, a lot of these were historical. They were from years ago. So these sightings kind of are just kind of a misnomer. It's not a spike in actual UFO sightings. It's just a spike, again, in total numbers of sightings reported. But still interesting, and I do like to look at statistics like that because it kind of gives us an idea of what's going on out there and if there's different things that are affecting these sightings. Now, you'd expect September and November to have massive spikes because of the sightings of the rocket launches in Florida and California, respectively. But it doesn't look as if that really had any major effect on the sightings. And it's trends like that that we look out for when you're looking at any kind of statistics, especially UFO sightings. But again, I would have to say that that big spike there in the middle is due to the popular television show Hangar One and the forum for MUFON.com for people to go and report their sightings without fear of retaliation or being ridiculed. So that's your UFO news for the week. I don't have any ghost news. But I have plenty of other news here in the on the show here for you. And some we're going to keep going with the statistics. And this one is a little scary. When I was reading this, I kind of wasn't sure if I was going to talk about this because it's not technically paranormal. But I thought it was interesting with looking at this. There's a graph on here that when you look at this bar graph on the link, and I put the link in the chat room there, it's a little startling. It's a little scary. And again, statistics only show data, and it's in how you determine that data and where the answers are coming from. But this is an interesting piece of statistics from one of my favorite places to get paranormal news. And this came from strangesounds.org. Strangesounds.org has an interesting article on the increase of fireball meteor reports, which comes directly from NASA. The story states that these statistics were made possible by data from NASA's All Sky Fireball Network, which observes and provides daily reports from fireball activity over the United States and gets information from the American Meteor Society. So, from 2014 to 2015, there's been a 20% increase in the reports of fireballs. Now, that doesn't sound all that impressive, but all we have to do is look back a little further to see where the cause for concern comes from. And from 2013 to 2014, there was a 120% increase in fireballs over the world. The scary thing is to look at the bar graph, which shows a steady increase since 2010. Before 2010, things looked pretty steady. Then suddenly in 2011, there was a sharp increase. 2012 showed a slow increase, followed by a significant jump in 2013 to the ludicrous increase of 2014. Now, to put this in even scarier terms, well, look at the actual numbers associated with these jumps. Well, not actual numbers, but kind of the estimated numbers based on the bar graph we're seeing here. Prior to 2010, there were less than 1,000 fireballs reported each year, although 2010 showed a mild increase in reports. 2011 showed an increase to just over 1,500 reports in the year. In 2012, the number jumped to just over 2,000 reports of fireballs. In 2013, the number skyrocketed to over 3,500 reports. And while that number sounds impressive, we now look to 2014, where the number of fireballs reported jumped to nearly 8,000. 8,000 from 3,500, up from 2,000, up from 1,500, up from 1,000. So something's going on. And last year, that number continued to increase with just over 9,000 fireballs reported. What is going on in our skies? And should we be concerned? Well, we'll take a look at so far for the year. And so far for the year, this trend actually seems to be continuing. As of January 7th, the cumulative number of sightings is over 200 already. Last year at the same time, it was 140, and in 2014, that number was 100. While 1 week is still a small sample size, it still figures to be a similar steady increase to the year before and is already trending to 10,400 sightings compared again to the just over 9,000 in 2015. Again, this is just a small sample size of 1 week, but should we be concerned? Now, the other question you can ask, again, when we're looking at data like this is, where's the data coming from and what does it truly represent? Is this just better data recording methods, or are we really being bombarded by more fragments? Now, my personal opinion, I would honestly say that the data suggests both, but either way, it's concerning that there are more fireballs hitting Earth, or at least Earth's atmosphere. While most of these are small fragments, we don't have to look far back to see a number of stories in the last few years where scary incidents of large fragments caused sonic booms breaking windows and causing overall concern. The news has been littered with near flybys of larger rocks, but Earth has managed to dodge them all. And I'm not one to panic about these things, but again, this data is a little bit concerning. What is really going on in our skies? Well, NASA doesn't seem to be too concerned. They really haven't said much about this. There's been no press releases, and this data is just looking at what is being represented by these sightings. And where are we at here? UFO sightings. Well, I got one big major story here to talk about. But I'm going to pause here for a second. Just checking out the chat room. I thought I saw a question in here. Not sure. About something about the UFO reports here. I lost it, and I can't find it. Something about per capita here for California. Well, the reason why California is usually number one is because it has the largest number of people per state. So MUFON used to do their sighting statistics by per capita, which would actually bump California down pretty low. They should be three times the amount of Florida, although Florida does have a very sizable population. I believe it goes California, New York, Florida, Texas, I think is the ranking in population. But MUFON used to do – I don't know why they don't do it per capita anymore. To me, that made a lot more sense because then you could get a better representation of how many sightings, again, per capita, per person, per 100,000 people in that particular state. So you kind of get a general idea if there are more sightings than there should be in a particular state versus another state, because California is always going to be number one in total number of sightings. So it's kind of disproportionate information, and it kind of skews what you're looking at, and it makes it seem as if the data really is representing something else other than what it's actually representing. And we're going to take a quick second here and remind you that you're listening to WCJV Digital Broadcasting from Youngstown, New York. And you're listening to the Paranormal News Insider with your host, Dr. Brian D. Parsons. Be sure to listen in tonight after the show, well, about an hour after I'm done. You can go get a snack. You can go shovel the sidewalk. But get your pencil sharp and grab your notebook. There's going to be a lot of great information coming up tonight from Frank Lee. Frank Lee is a great host, a great guy. He's got a great show as well. Tonight, 8 p.m. Central, 9 p.m. Eastern. If you live in Australia, you figure out that time. Tonight, Frank Lee is going to be talking with Mike St. Clair from Viper Paranormal as he shares tips and advice for finding gear on a budget. Tech tips, DIY ghost gear, debunking advice. I might have to tune in for that. I'll take a nap. And a lot more tonight on Paranormalities and Ponderings radio show with host Frank Lee right here on WCJV. Great show, and check it out. It's an awesome show, and I'm sure my friends from ParanormalForum.net will be listening in as well. Well, maybe not. They'll probably be listening to Jim Mallett, but I highly recommend that they listen to Frank's show. They need to be listening to Frank's show. It's a great show. Lots of information. And again, it's the kind of show that you do sit down and you need to take notes from. There's not that many shows. A lot of these shows are just about entertainment, which you can't blame them for. But for me personally, I don't care about how many people are listening in. I don't care about my stats. It's awesome to look at it. It's great to see how many downloads I get on my Podbean account. But I'm doing this show as best as I can to not just entertain people, but I want to educate people as well. And that's kind of what this whole entire network is all about. We're here to educate people about a variety of topics and subjects and bring you the truth, because the truth is out there. You just have to be willing to look for it. And speaking of the truth, interesting segue here. One of my favorite videos of the year. I think I say that every week for a different video. But so far this year, this has been the coolest video. It's also been one of the most frustrating videos because I've been jumping up and down and hollering and pointing at my screen saying that this is not what people think it is. But yet people have sided with this video and said, oh, no, this is the real deal. Experts have chimed in and said this is the real deal. And I'm, of course, referring to the Canberra, Australia video. Here we are in Australia again. I better get some listeners from Australia. I'm going to be highly disappointed if my ratings don't go up in Australia. Anyway, Canberra, Australia. Strange video. If you haven't seen it, I don't know where you've been. It's been all over the internet. And it's been one of the biggest mysteries, or I should say mysterious stories of the year. Because it's – some people say it's real. Some people say it's fake. Some people aren't sure. Some people are just kind of entertained by the whole video. And this video it was uploaded earlier this month. I can't remember the name of the original host, but it ended up on YouTube, and it showed an aurora, which is green and red, in a thunderstorm, which is highly unlikely, and it ended with a flash of light filmed over the skies, again, of Canberra, Australia. And the bright ball, which was described as genuine ball lightning by experts, and I use that term loosely, meteorologists and I think a physicist also chimed in on this story, and they both proclaimed that this was genuine ball lightning filmed by this person, and that got most of the attention in the video. Now, some had speculated that they saw UFOs entering this flash and that it was a portal for them to travel back and forth through. Okay. The uploader of the original video, who was named Johnson Thompson, had only this one video uploaded to YouTube and left many on both sides of the line of belief. On last week's show, I talked plenty about this video, and I talked, I basically presented many reasons why I felt this video was faked, and I felt that the experts were wrong. Yes, I called them out on it. I don't think they're right. And I stuck to that. I went on different chat rooms, or I should say different message boards. I was on unexplainedmysteries.com. I think I actually broke that story on that site for them, provided them the link to that video. And there was a lot of argument back and forth. And a lot of people sided with these experts saying, well, you know, if they said it's real, they know better. So I'm going to stick with that. And I presented basically the same arguments that I presented last week here on the Paranormal News Insider about how I felt that this video was not legitimate. And I got a little kickback from some people on Unexplained Mysteries, but I stuck to my guns because I really felt that this was not genuine. Well, Johnson Thompson released another video just a few days ago titled, quote, "How I Accidentally Created a Hoax," unquote. In the video, Mr. Thompson describes how he created the video using Adobe After Effects. And, I guess let me get the I'll get that video up here in the chat room so you guys can check it out as I'm talking about it here. And see that cool video? You see the end there. That's awesome. You got to watch it to understand that part there. But the video is up in the chat room there, and I'll be sharing it across my social media outlets as well. Hopefully I'll get that up tonight, tomorrow. I'm not sure when. Whenever I get around to it, I guess. And see, it's already there on the paranormalforum.net threads. It's awesome. They got it up there already. They beat me to the punch. It's frustrating when you have to see these kinds of videos, these hoax videos, these things that are lying to people. And it creates so much belief that people are led astray. People argue about these things, and they're not sure whether or not they're real or not. And people fabricate these things. It's really annoying. It's irritating, and it sometimes really angers me, especially when there's a lot more to it than just creating a video and putting it online. But, this wasn't really – I don't think this was intentional. And it's extremely nice that this person took the time to admit to say, hey, I did this. I didn't intend for this to be this big. So I'm extremely happy that he did take the time to demonstrate how the video was created. Now, Mr. Thompson did not intend for this video to go viral, and especially did not think this would be believed, as it was just something he did for fun. By the time he got up the next day, it had already run in local media without them contacting him. Well, you don't really have to contact somebody when you throw something like that on the internet. But in a short conversation I had with Johnson through his YouTube account, he admitted that this was his first time video editing as well as using Adobe After Effects. He wasn't actually going for any realism, and was just hoping that others would give him a critique on his skills and help him become better. But once he stepped forward and admitted this was a fake video, the media labeled him as a hoaxer, and he feels guilty, or I should say genuinely sorry, for those who evaluated and commented on the video for taking time out to do so. While I do get upset about these videos, I do think he is honestly sorry about this story taking on a life of its own. He seems very genuine about his apology, and the original video is now labeled that it's not real. So I really don't think he meant to do this. So this is kind of an accidental type of event here. And sometimes these things do blow up unintentionally. And I told him that I hope things just blow over for him. And hopefully, and I know better, these stories just go away over a couple of days or even a couple of weeks. So I'm sure he'll be okay. And as long as he doesn't create anything else, because if he does, I'll expose it. I'll find it. And I hope you're learning that you cannot trust what you see on the internet, especially YouTube and Facebook. Granted, you know, it's kind of one of those things, and we could talk about this at length, that does it create the question of when you see something strange, should your knee-jerk reaction be to say, nope, that's CGI, nope, that's Adobe, nope, it's fake? I mean, should we automatically react that way, or should we just say, wow, that's real? Let's get an expert to evaluate that before I start sharing it everywhere. Now, it's okay to share stuff, but to automatically assume something is real is dangerous. And myself and a lot of other people, we do this a lot. We evaluate these kinds of videos for a lot of the things that I mentioned last week in the video, the shadows, the way the lighting was, and I was fooled. I learned a lot about this video, and the way it was created, I had no idea that certain lighting effects were that good in this digital editing software. So even my opinions were a little bit wrong. I was a little off. I knew it was fake. I knew it was created by CGI, but I didn't really know how or how the effects worked. So it's something of mine to get a little bit more involved in this digital editing software. And I don't really want to create anything because I never want my integrity questioned. But I do feel as a researcher and investigator, you know, I feel ashamed that I wasn't able to go on there and replicate this video myself and show people this is exactly how it was done. It was a lesson for me. It was a learning experience. And I really enjoyed the fact, again, that he came forward and admitted what he did. And I don't think that we should automatically just assume that these things are fake, nor should we automatically assume that they're real. What we should do is evaluate what we're seeing in these videos. Were there other witnesses? In this particular video of the Canberra, Australia ball lightning flash, there were no other people that came forward and said they saw this. That's a huge red flag. And the other things within the video, the aurora, which was fake, that was something that I raised a concern for, and I did the fact-finding and the research behind and demonstrated that this was not, in fact, filmed at that time, nor was it really possible that this was occurring. So we have to look at the evidence. We have to look at what we're presented and just problem solve. Just look at each individual aspect of the video and evaluate it for validity. And when you're left at the end of this video, you're basically going to give it a grade. And for me, most of what was in this video was very low. So I really didn't hold too much to it. And as the days progressed, nobody really came forward and said that they saw anything either. You would think that there would be cameras somewhere that would have picked this flash up or would have picked up the actual ball lightning. Nothing. So all these things, you add them up and it adds up to how you should really approach or how you should believe it. You shouldn't believe it based on your personal beliefs because that's going to lead you astray. And you shouldn't just knee-jerk and say, this is CGI, it's not real. Because a lot of these videos, I'm not even sure of, and I wouldn't discredit them or discount them. But I've learned over the years a lot of ways that people are not just creating these to create hoaxes or to fool people, but a lot of times people are fooled by what they see or what they interpret on a video is actually being. From pareidolia to bugs flying at close range looking like UFOs to birds flying fast, a lot of different things can affect these types of videos. So all I can say about that is lesson learned. And again, big thanks to Johnson Thompson for coming forward as well as taking time to converse with me really quick about what was going on, and really being a human being about it. He didn't have to be that way. He could have just hid or just deleted the videos and pretend like it never happened. But he manned up to it. So I think it was really good the way it turned out. Now, the next story here is also from strangesounds.org. It's another concerning story with a lot of logical answers here, but it's still a little unnerving. And I didn't really think about it until I read the story about how last year there was a lot of strange sounds being reported all over the world. They were in the news a lot last January, and it looks like so far this year is going to be a repeat. Pennsylvania encountered some strange noise on Saturday, January 9th, as 10 calls were made to 911 about sounds that people felt were explosions. Fire crews were dispatched to the area but were unable to find the cause. It is thought that these booms were caused by frost quakes. Jerry Jones of Jones Geological Services in Spring Grove, Pennsylvania, states that, quote, "A frost quake typically occurs when temperatures are fairly warm and then drop below freezing. With the drop in temperature, moisture freezes in the cold weather and expands by about 7%, leading to the explosion sound," unquote. Several reports have also been flooding into Huntington, Indiana officials about booms being reported over the last 2 weeks, with a recent spike last week. Now, officials in Colorado have also reported similar noises as well. While there have been numerous theories, officials believe that frost quakes are probably the answer here with both the Indiana and Colorado cases as well. A loud boom also shook homes in Ardmore, Oklahoma at 10:15 a.m. local time on Friday, January 8th. The story about the local CBS affiliate KXII News 12 states, quote, "Joseph Murray with the Shepherd Air Force Base says Lockheed Martin, a security, aerospace, and information technology company, was performing sonic boom maneuvers Friday morning, but he says he doesn't know where," unquote. Weird. I think it's highly strange that they would admit they're doing sonic boom maneuvers, but interesting nonetheless. On 6 p.m. local time on Saturday, January 2nd, a loud explosion was reported in Sanoa, Sharpsburg, and Peachtree City, which is a region 30 to 35 miles south of Atlanta, Georgia. The suspected culprit for the explosion? Tannerite. Tannerite is the brand name of a binary explosive marketed primarily for making exploding targets for long-range firearms practice. Detonation is only possible with a round traveling 2,000 feet per second or faster. A caliber of .233 or higher is required to explode the mixture at a safe distance. It's pretty explosive stuff. It is a patented combination of ammonium nitrate, which acts as an oxidizer, and aluminum powder for the fuel. And let me just say, from watching some of the videos on it and knowing about tannerite, it is legal, it is lethal, and it is loud. Friday, January 8th, a strange boom was also heard in the Panhandle region of Florida at 12:30 p.m. local time. While the source remains a mystery, experts in the area feel the weather could have enhanced the sound, whatever the sound may be. According to NBC affiliate WJHG News Channel 7's website, quote, "Temperatures usually get colder as you get off the ground, but Friday the ground was cooler than the air above. Assuming the boom originated from the ground, sound waves bounced off the warm air above the ground and then went back to the surface," unquote. But we still don't know what the sound in question was. California officials also reported booms in the Paso Robles area, which lies between Los Angeles and San Francisco. The culprit is being reported as Camp Roberts. The facility is used by the California National Guard, the Army Reserves, and other units. But again, we have no explanation as to the actual source of the noise. The sound of an explosion also accompanied a 3.5 magnitude earthquake that struck Nebraska on Monday, January 4th, at 10 a.m. local time. And not necessarily noise related, but certainly a strange Earth story. Let me put this in the chat room so you can watch this. It's kind of scary here. It's not at first, but once you watch it, it's a little scary. Or should I say unnerving? An event that happened in, oh, geez, where else? Well, Australia. It's not noise related, but certainly a strange Earth story. On January 9th, a rogue wave washed ashore in Sydney, Australia, injuring over 60 people and leaving three women with serious injuries. Now, the wave could be seen coming in, but those involved had little time to escape it as it slammed onto shore and sweeping everyone with it. It's a pretty startling video to watch, and you never know when you're at the ocean when something like this would ever happen, whatever would occur. So it was pretty frightening to see this, and I don't know. Just some of the people in there just didn't really seem to take it as serious as other people who were running like hell to get out of that area in time. So we have kind of debated this week on the book of the week. I actually had one picked out on meteors since we were talking about meteors here from the NASA reports. But I picked another one during the day that was kind of going back and forth on Facebook with Frank Lee about some research that he was doing. And I picked up this book a long time ago at a store called Five Below. I don't know. Well, it's probably the temperature or the how cold it feels outside right now. But Five Below is a discount store. It's in, I think, 21 states here in the East Coast. It's a great store. It had a little sticker here that looks like it was from Barnes & Noble for $9.98. Well, I got my copy for $3. I got a great deal on it. And this book kind of was interesting. I remember getting this book, and I remember I do like going there to shop for their books. They have a lot of cool, interesting stuff. Now, the store, Five Below, is geared more towards like teenagers and preteens and kids and stuff, but they do have some adult stuff, not much, but they have some really interesting books, comic books, if you're interested in those things, and just a lot of low-end stuff. But their books are quite interesting. And this particular book I picked up, I started thumbing through it thinking it would be just silly and ridiculous. But there was quite a few experiments in this book that I found very interesting. And the book is called The Mad Science Book, 100 Amazing Experiments from the History of Science. And the book is written by Rito U. Schneider. And it's an interesting book. And the way it's laid out is really interesting as well. When you look inside of it, it's listed by date. And the book was published – let me see here. The book was published in, let's say, 2003 or something like that. I don't even see it. It's not even – or 2008, I guess. But it starts back in 1304, and it kind of skips around a little bit. There's dates that are missing, but it does kind of go cumulative there at a time and does do a couple of years in a row. But it does skip to the 1600s and then 1718s. And one of the interesting ones here that attracted my attention, and one that I was talking with Frank Lee about, was 1901 entry for the soul weighs 21 grams. And if you've ever heard about 21 grams, it was turned into a movie, but it's based on an experiment conducted by a man named William, or I should say Duncan McDougall. William McDougall's a parapsychologist. Duncan McDougall, who did this experiment on trying to capture the soul, basically leaving the death of the body as the person passed away. I'm sure plenty of people have heard about the story and read about the story, but I can tell you that it's not what you think. It was not real, science being used. Although it did appear in the Washington Post, I don't think it was ever peer-reviewed, but it did appear in the Journal of the American Society for Psychical Research. And that journal was 1907 where it appeared. The movie came out in 2003. Movie's not very good, folks. But if you can get it cheap, you could find it on Netflix. I don't know. I don't think I've seen it on Netflix or Hulu or anywhere else. But I'm sure it's probably on YouTube for all I know. It's interesting. Interesting thing here. It's a little disturbing when you get into the story of how McDougall did his experimentation. But that's just one little thing here. It's only a couple of pages. It's only like 2.5-3 pages. But it was a lot of good research. And I did use that to write a blog entry that's now floating all over the place on the internet. And there's also some other really interesting stuff here. The next one is 1902, which was talking about Pavlov's dogs, which I'm sure you're familiar with as well. And another one that I really enjoyed was an entry from 1904 that talked about the horse whisperer. Now, this is a story about a man named Wilhelm von Osten, who had a horse called Hans, and it turned out to be called Clever Hans. And this horse would be able to solve mathematical riddles. It probably could have solved how to split the lottery winnings a little bit better than some of the people who push the memes out there on social media. But Clever Hans was revered as a intelligent horse that knew how to solve problems, could even spell. But it was found out that through a man named Oliver Fungst that the owner of the horse was actually giving the horse subliminal clues. Von Osten didn't realize that he was actually giving the horse clues. It was unintentional. But Oliver Fungst realized that subtle clues in body language were tipping off the horse when to start and when to stop putting its hoof on the ground. And it's an interesting story because I'm really into body language studies and have designed some classes and courses and things. And it's just something of a side hobby that I'm really interested in. It's a great example of that. And that's just three examples in this book. And it goes all the way to 2003. There's a lot of really interesting stuff here. And they're short. Each entry is only about 2 or 3 pages long. I think the longest one here is like 5 or 6 pages long. So it's a page turner. And if you're into science, you're into scientific investigations at all, this is a fantastic book to get. And it's really cheap now. You can get it online, I think, for less than $1. You probably pay more in shipping and handling than anything else. And it's just under 300 pages. But again, it's a page turner. And it's a really interesting book. And I've referenced it a few times. These aren't just little stories. These are actually referenced and stories that were dug into and looked at and evaluated. And so you're getting the real story here. You're getting all the correct information about all of these little scientific discoveries going on out there in the world. And some of them are a little disturbing. I have to preface that, especially the one here about McDougall killing people or watching people die, I should say, looking for the soul. But it's interesting that we get that information from there. Now, conferences, conventions, it's kind of quiet right now. We did have the International Cryptozoology Museum's conference last week. The next one I have on my ghost conference list here is the Yuma Prison Paracon 2016 in February 5th through the 7th in Yuma, Arizona. The American Hauntings Annual Dead of Winter Festival, of course, every year. That takes place February 6th in Decatur, Illinois. And the cool thing about that is free admission. That's always a good time up there. And it kind of tapers off, jumps into March, April. And for that, the UFO arena has the International UFO Congress happening February 17th through the 21st in Scottsdale, Arizona. And cryptozoology, like I've mentioned before, I have an event myself coming up that I'll be taking part in on May 6th through the 8th in Farmington, Pennsylvania. It's the 2016 Pennsylvania Bigfoot Camping Adventure, and that is hosted by Eric Altman. And we'll also have some other awesome guests. Steve Coles of Sasquatch Detective Radio will also be speaking at that event. there's going to be workshops. There's going to be hiking. There's going to be Stan Gordon. If you've never heard of Stan Gordon, Stan Gordon is an awesome researcher based out of Pennsylvania. Great guy, really down to earth person. There's going to be workshops. Dwayne Pintoff, Tom Ferentz, Tim Cassidy, and Eric Allman will all be presenting some workshops, intertwingled, is that a word? Intermingled with those of us that are going to be speaking at that event. And you can find more information at PA Bigfoot Camping Adventure. That's a lot of words. PABigfootCampingAdventure.weebly.com. And check that out. It's going to be a good time, going to be a lot of fun. And I'm still in the process of updating the conferences and conventions site for 2016, but I do have a little over 20 ghost conferences and conventions already, a small handful of UFO and cryptid events as well, but I'll be expanding that list. And if you have any information about any event and would like to hear it here, as well as see it on the website, let me know and contact me at insider@paranewsinsider.com or get a hold of me through any of the social media outlets, Twitter, Facebook, Google+. I'm out there. You can find me, Paranews Insider, anywhere on any of those pieces of social media. I can't believe it's already 8 o'clock and it's time to go. But it's been a great show. It's been a lot of great information. Hopefully you've learned something out there. And I want to give big thanks to Cindy, my producer, for all the hard work she does behind the scenes, and to Dita out there in the chat room for her help with posting pictures and things for me and links while I'm caught up in reading and listening to my own voice here. And I want to thank everyone else for tuning in to the chat room tonight, as well as out there in cyberspace and those folks at paranormalforum.net. Thanks a lot, guys. I appreciate your support. So keep your eyes in the skies, your ears in the woods, the hair standing on the back of your neck, and always keep your mind slightly ajar. And above all else, don't stop believing. For the Paranormal News Insider, this is Dr. Brian D. Parsons reporting.
You are listening to WCJV Digital Broadcasting, Youngstown, New York.